ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Beyond Texas. It's been quite a while, but I have been doing many things, I assure you. I want to share with you today a famous book called Platero y Yo by Juan Ramon Jimenez, who was the Nobel Prize winner for Literature in 1956. Jimenez said that this book was an absolute tribute to Platero. We're not sure whether Platero was his donkey or whether this is purely fictional. Jimenez's love for Platero is evident on every page of this book. He writes about the donkey with the same tenderness and affection that a parent would have for a child. He describes Platero's physical appearance in loving detail, from his long ears and soft fur to his gentle eyes. He also shares Platero's thoughts and feelings, giving the reader a unique insight to the inner life of this extraordinary creature. Through his relationship with Platero, Jimenez explores a wide range of themes, including the beauty of nature, the importance of friendship, and the fleetingness of life itself. He writes about the simple joys of everyday life, such as riding Platero through the Andalusian countryside and enjoying lunch together in a mountain meadow. Platero y Yo is a timeless classic. It has captivated readers for generations. It is a book that can be enjoyed on many levels. I call it a children's story for adults. It is a book that will stay with you long after you finish reading it. And that is true for me. I first read it 40 years ago. And Jimenez's mastery of color charmed me. And it comes back to me every time I see a gorgeous sunset or a beautiful field of wildflowers. His use of color springs to mind. Even the name Platero means silvery. Jimenez himself had this tribute for Platero. He said, "Dear trotting Platero, my beloved little donkey, who carried my soul many times, only my soul, along the deep roadways of cacti and mallows and honeysuckle, for you, this book is for you." So we begin with his introduction of Platero. Platero is a small donkey, a soft, hairy donkey, so soft to the touch that he might be said to be made of cotton, with no bones. Only the jet mirrors of his eyes are hard like two black crystal scarabs. I turn him loose and he goes to the meadow, and with his nose he gently caresses the little flowers of rose and blue and gold. I call him softly. I say, "Platero, Platero." And he comes to me at a gay little trot that is like laughter, of a vague, idyllic, tinkling sound. He eats whatever I give him. He likes mandarin oranges, amber-hued muscatel grapes, purple figs tipped with crystalline drops of honey. He is as loving and tender as a child, but strong and sturdy as a rock. When on Sundays I ride him through the lanes in the outskirts of the town, slow-moving countrymen, dressed in their Sunday best, watch him a while, speculatively. "He is like steel," they say. Steel, yes, steel, and moon silver at the same time. The crazy man. Dressed in my mourning clothes, that's with a U, mourning, with my long brown beard and my small black hat, I must look odd riding on Platero's gray softness. When on my way to the vineyards I cross the last streets, whitewashed and dazzlingly bright in the sunlight, shaggy-haired gypsy children with sleek tan bellies, showing off their green, red, and yellow rags, they run after us, shrilling a long, drawn-out call, "Crazy man! Crazy man!" Before us lies the open country, face to face with the vast, pure sky of fiery blue. My eyes, so far from my ears, open contentedly, receiving in all its quietness, that nameless calm, that harmonious and divine serenity that lies in the infinitude of the horizon. And from a distance over the fields, sharp cries, finally muffled, broken, breathless, faint, "Crazy man, crazy man." The cistern. "Look at it. The last spring rains have filled it to the brim, Platero. It has no echo now, nor can one see in its new depth the reflection of the oriel window bathed in sunlight, prismatic jewel above the yellow and blue pattern of the glass patio roof. You have never been down in the cistern, Platero." "I have. I went down when it was emptied many years ago. Listen, it has a long underground gallery, and then a very small room. When I entered it, the candle I carried was snuffed out by the fingers of the darkness, and a salamander crawled over my hand. Two icy sensations crossed each other in my breast like swords, or like the crossbones under a skull. The whole town is honeycombed with cisterns and galleries, Platero. The largest cistern is the one in the courtyard of the ancient citadel of the castle. The best one is the one at my house, which, as you see, has the curbstone carved in one piece of alabastron marble. The gallery of the church goes as far as the Puntales vineyard, and there it opens on the fields near the river. The one that starts at the hospital, no one has ever dared to follow it to its end because it never ends. I remember how when I was a child, the sobbing murmur of the rain that fell from the flat-tiled roof into the cistern troubled my sleepless hours. Then in the morning, mad with eagerness, we would go to the cistern to see how high the water had reached. When it was up to the rim, as now, what surprise, what excitement, what exclamations! Well, Platero, now, I am going to give you a bucketful of pure, fresh water. Kindergarten. The children had all gone off to school. If you could go to kindergarten with the other children, Platero, you would learn the ABCs, and you would learn to write. You would know more than the donkey and the wax figures, the little mermaid's friend. You would know more than the doctor, and more than the village priest, Platero. But although you were only four, you were so big and clumsy. In what little chair could you sit? At what table could you write? What paper and pen would do for you? Where in the chorus could you sing, say, the credo? No, Doña Domitila, in her purple habit of the Order of the Nazarene, with its yellow cord like Reyes the fisherman, would have you at best kneeling for 2 hours in a corner of the plantain garden. Or she would slap your hooves with her long dry cane, and she would eat the quince meat of your lunch. Or she would put a burning paper under your tail so that your ears would be as red and warm as those of the farmer's son when it's going to rain. No, Platero, no. You come with me. I will show you the flowers and the stars, and no one shall laugh at you as at a stupid child, nor shall anyone place on your head, as if you were what they call an ass, the ridiculous dunce cap with ears twice as long as yours. Look, Platero, how roses are falling everywhere. Blue roses, pink ones, white ones, roses with no color. One might say that the sky is dissolving in roses. See how my forehead, my shoulders, my hands are covered with roses? What shall I do with so many roses? Do you perhaps know where all this tender flora comes from? For I myself do not know its source, which each day softens the landscape and leaves it sweetly rosy white and blue. More roses, like a painting by Fra Angelico, he who used to paint glory on his knees. It might be thought that roses are being thrown down from the seven heavens of paradise, as in a warm and vaguely colored snowfall. The roses fall on tower, on roof, on trees. Look, everything harsh turns delicate with their adornment. Roses, roses, roses. It seems, Platero, while the Angelus sings, that this life of ours loses its everyday strength, and that another force within, more high-minded, more constant and pure, makes everything, as though fed from a reservoir of grace, rise. Rise to the stars which are already shining among the roses. Your eyes, which you cannot see, Platero, and which you raise humbly to the sky, are two beautiful roses. The Pit. You, my dear Platero, if you die before I do, you are not going to the marsh, nor to the deep ravine-like pit beside the mountain road in the old town crier's cart, like poor donkeys, poor dogs and horses, which no one loves. You will not be with your fleshless ribs bloody from the crow's picking, like the bare ribs of a boat against the scarlet sunset. You will not be an ugly spectacle for the travelers to San Juan Station in the 6 o'clock coach, nor lie swollen and rigid on the rotten shelves of the pit to frighten thrill-seeking children on their Sunday evening walk through the pine grove when they gaze in fear and curiosity over the edge. Don't worry, Platero, live in peace. I shall bury you at the foot of the tall round pine in the orchard, which you love so well. You shall lie beside gay and beautiful life. The children will play around you, and the young girls will learn to sew, sitting in low chairs by your side. You will know the verses brought to me by solitude. You will hear the singing of the washer girls in the orange grove, and the noise of the well will add joy and coolness to your sleep. All the year round, the larks, the titmice, and the young green finches will form above you in the perennial verdure of the pine top. They will form a brief canopy of music between your quiet slumber and the blue of the infinite sky. The Roof. You, Platero, have never climbed to the flat roof of the house. You can't know how one's heart expands with the joy of breathing when attaining it from the dark and narrow wooden stairway. One feels the heat of the full daytime sun and knows himself flooded with blue, as though touching the sky itself, blinded by the whiteness of the lime with which, as you know, the brick floor is covered, so that the water from the clouds may reach the cistern, clear and clean. What enchantment on the roof, Platero! The bells of the tower ring within you, on a level within your heart which beats faster. You can see the distant vineyards, the hoes gleaming with a glint of silver and sunlight. You dominate everything. Other roofs, yards where forgotten people work, each at its own task. The painter, the hooper, spots that are trees and barnyards, the cemetery to which there comes from time to time, small and black and unnoticed, a humble third-class funeral, windows at which a girl in a white bodice carelessly combs her hair and sings, the river and a boat that never quite reaches port, granaries where a lone musician practices on his horn, or where blind, violent love is having its way. The house has disappeared like an underground cellar. How strange, through the crystal skylight, ordinary life below. Words, sounds, even the garden, so beautiful in itself, you, Platero, drinking at the trough, not seeing me, or playing like a simpleton with the sparrow or with the turtle. Return. Platero and I were returning from the mountains, heavily loaded, he with sandalwood, and I with yellow lilies. It was April dusk. Everything that in the West had been limpid gold was now limpid silver, a smooth luminosity of Cape Jasmine petals. Then the vast sky became transparent sapphire, then emerald. Sadness held me like a shroud. From the hilltop, one tower of the town, the church steeple, crowned with blue tiles, acquired in the clarity of the hour a monumental aspect. For the moment, it was the Giralda from a distance, and my yearning for Sevilla, acute in the springtime, found in the sight a melancholy comfort. Return, where, from what, to what, for what? But the lilies I carried were more odorous in the warm freshness of the approaching night. Their fragrance was more penetrating, at the same time more vague, coming from the unseen blossoms, as if they had become all perfume, intoxicating the body and the soul in the solitary darkness. "O soul of mine, lily in the shadow," I said. And suddenly I remembered Platero, whom, though on him, I had forgotten, as if he were a part of my body. The gypsies. Look at her, Platero. There she comes down the street in the coppery sunshine, straight, erect, shawless, looking at no one. How well she carries the memory of her beauty, gallant still, like an oak, her red kerchief round her body, over her blue-white dotted skirt with many ruffles. She is on her way to the town hall to ask permission to encamp, as usual, behind the cemetery. You remember the sordid tents of the gypsies, their fires, their gaudy women, their starving donkeys all around? The donkeys, Platero. The donkeys of the town must be trembling hearing the gypsies from their stable yards. I am not uneasy about Platero because, to get to his stable, the gypsies would have to leap over half the town. And besides, Rengel, the watchman, likes him. And me. But in jest, to frighten him, I say with a voice charged with implications, "In, Platero, in! Let me close the grating. Someone will get you." And Platero, sure that the gypsies will not get him, passes at a trot through the iron door, which closes after him with a harsh sound of iron and glass. He leaps from the marble court into the flower garden. Like an arrow, he speeds into the stable yard, breaking in his short flight the blue morning glory vine. A few mornings later, I found Platero lying on his bed of straw, eyes soft and sad. I went to him. I stroked him, talking to him and trying to help him stand. The poor fellow quivered. He started to rise, one forefoot bent under, and he couldn't get up. Then I straightened his foot on the ground. I patted him tenderly, and I called the doctor. Old Darbon, as soon as he saw him, puckered his toothless mouth and shook his bulbous head like a pendulum. "No hope?" I asked. I don't know what he answered. The poor fellow was dying, nothing, a pain, some root he had eaten, some root with grass. At noon, Platero was dead. His little cotton-like stomach had swollen like a globe, and his rigid, discolored legs were raised to heaven. His curly hair looked now like the moth-eaten tow hair of old dolls that falls off when you touch it. Through the silent stable fluttered a beautiful, three-colored butterfly, its translucent wings seeming to catch fire every time it passed the ray of light that came in through the little window. On the wooden sawhorse I placed poor Platero's saddle, bridle, and halter, and I took everything to the big barn, to the corner, where the children's forgotten candles are. The barn is wide, it is silent and sunny. From there I can see the whole countryside, the windmill, red to the left, in front, covered with pine trees, Montemayor, with its white chapel, behind the church, the inaccessible piña orchard, to the west the sea, high and shining in the high summer tides. During vacation time, the children play in the barn. At times, they mount the soulless sawhorse, and with restless, impetuous moving of feet and hands, they trot through the meadows with their imaginations. Giddy up, Platero. Giddy up, Platero. Melancholy. This afternoon, I went with the children to Platero's grave, a low mound that lies in the orchard at the foot of a round, fatherly pine tree. April had adorned the damp earth with large yellow lilies. Titmice were singing above in the green canopy, mottled with the blue zenith, and their light trilling, joyous and fairy-like, drifted away on the golden air of the balmy evening, like a limpid dream of new love. As soon as we arrived, the children stopped shouting. Quiet and sober, their bright eyes following mine, they plied me with anxious questions. "Friend Platero," I said to the earth, "if, as I believe, you are now in a heavenly meadow and carry angel children on your hairy back, have you forgotten me, perhaps? Tell me, Platero, do you remember me?" And as if answering my question, a white butterfly, soft and smooth as waxen petals, fluttered gently, like a soul, from lily to lily.